I'm joined by Albany Times Union editor Casey Seiler to talk about his column, Darkness Closer to Home. Casey, welcome back to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thanks, Elizabeth. It's great to be here.
Can you start off by contextualizing this column, Darkness Closer to Home, by explaining the meaning of the title?
I was writing about kind of coming off of the situation in Rochester. It was in the Times Union about a week ago, so of course the previous week had just been explosive over the death of Daniel Prude, which occurred at the very end of March, about a week after, of course, the controversial scene where, in what appeared to be a mental distress call, a group of police officers put what they refer to as a spit bag over his head, put him in what, of course, I think anybody who has seen the videos would agree are a fairly alarming set of stress positions. And of course, he ended up dying about a week later. And the ME's call on that was that it was asphyxiation. Of course, it was only 5 months later that his death really came to light. And even that was only due to the fact that his family and their legal representation put in a FOIL request for that video that ultimately resulted in the family being able to show off the footage. But I think going from the Rochester Police Department, of course, the police chief subsequent to that column resigned along with other members of kind of the leadership team there. Mayor Lovely Warren, there have been calls for her to resign. She knew about this. She threw the police chief under the bus and claimed that that he had told her that it was an overdose death when, of course, it was asphyxiation, according to the medical examiner's report. All the way up to Attorney General Tish James, whose office was called in, but didn't say anything publicly about this death. And, of course, Governor Andrew Cuomo's office as well, who had to issue the executive order, which was actually an amendment to his previous executive order. He basically has to do essentially an update to executive orders whenever there's one of these deaths of an unarmed civilian in the context of an interaction with the police. This was the case with Edson Thevenin in Troy, and thinking about the death of Daniel Prude in the context of some situations closer to us here in the Capital Region is what sort of set me down this path.
In your column, you talk about a few cases that are happening closer to home, or you remind us of a few cases. One that I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about was the case of this now retired Cohoes police officer, Sean McCown.
Yeah, Rob Gavin reported last month that Sean McCown, who was a Cohoes City police officer, had been involved in early June, just about a week or so after the start of the protests that followed the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, was up at what I believe is his vacation camp up in the Adirondacks in Essex County, and was involved in an encounter with a mixed race group of young people that ended with Officer McCown firing off his service weapon. Now, Officer McCown told divergent stories to the state police, who responded to his own call for help. Initially, he said that he had been fired upon by a group of black youths and that he had returned fire and then for some bizarre reason had ditched his weapon. And when the state police showed up, they said that he appeared to be in a state of intoxication. A couple of hours later, he called up the state police and said, whoops, what actually happened was I fired my weapon into a tree stump. Ostensibly, it would appear that he was trying to scare off this group of youths who apparently were just walking around trying to get a cell phone signal, which is not always easy to do in the Adirondacks. Nobody was injured, but a fairly alarming experience. Now, after the state police investigated, the Cohoes Police Department and Cohoes' mayor found out about this. Cohoes' mayor is himself a former high-ranking state police official, and the decision was made to essentially let Officer McCown retire. And he was essentially taken off the street, And all summer long, he had been burning vacation time preparing for his retirement in August. Now, luckily, Rob Gavin, who is our Cops and Courts reporter and is a notorious digger, got a tip on this, chased it down, and was able to report all the details. When it came to light, the Essex County District Attorney, Christy Sprague, who previously, it appears, had decided kind of to take a pass on potentially bringing charges against Officer McCown for, filing a false report, decided that in the face of public outrage, once our story was published, decided that she wanted the state police to take further investigative steps. So Rob subsequently reported that the state police have now reopened their investigation. We've been trying to get District Attorney Sprague to answer some questions that she has been reluctant to do. And now, of course, she is saying that she can't comment because the investigation, which the state police had said weeks ago had been closed with no charges, is now open again. So Officer McCown is now fully retired. The problem there, of course, is that had it not been for Rob's story, McCown could have been hired by another police force. He could have become a corrections officer. He could have moved anywhere in the country and become a police officer, and this incident would not have come to light. This is an officer, I should say, who already had a DUI conviction on his record from Illinois from a couple of years ago.
Thank you for explaining that. Now, in your column, Darkness Closer to Home, you also move over to Troy, and we've previously discussed your column on Madden Silence in the Thevenin case. This week starts a trial with Abelov. Now, we've known this Thevenin case has gone through many twists and turns and is still not settled, but I was wondering if you could talk about the Thevenin case specifically around this upcoming trial of Abelov with a judge that I believe dismissed charges against him once already. Could you tell us a little bit more about what's happening here in Troy?
Sure. Former district attorney of Rensselaer County, Joel Abelov, was the district attorney when Edson Thevenin, a motorist who was shot by a now deceased Troy police officer, brought that case before a grand jury mere days after Thevenin was killed, with a speed that was stunning to observers. He failed to have the officer sign essentially a waiver of prosecution. The failure to get him to sign that essentially meant that it would be virtually impossible for him ever to face charges after he testified to the grand jury. Needless to say, the grand jury found that no charges should be brought, and that was it. The case was essentially closed as far as the course of criminal justice would go in Rensselaer County. The death of Edson Thevenin should have been investigated by the state attorney general's office, which then was under Eric Schneiderman. The AG's office subsequently called a grand jury to investigate the Thevenin case, but more primarily Joel Abelov's handling of the case. Abelov testified before that grand jury and subsequently faced charges that he had perjured himself in that appearance and also faced a charge of official misconduct. Now, those charges were first considered by a judge not from Rensselaer County, but from Columbia County, Jonathan Nichols, a state Supreme Court justice. Jonathan Nichols, 2 years ago, dismissed the charges against Abelov, concluding that the attorney general had gone beyond its jurisdiction in bringing those charges against him. That went to the state appellate division, which reversed Nichols's decision to dismiss, and the state court of appeals then declined to reconsider the action of the appellate division, which then allowed for the AG to once again press the charges against Abelov. Now, that brings us up to today, because we're talking on Sunday. On Monday, a trial is supposed to begin before Justice Nichols, and it will be a bench trial, which means that there will be no jury. Abelov, not surprisingly, has decided that he would like his fate decided by Justice Nichols. Now, it is amazing to me that a justice whose attitude towards the mere existence of this case has already been determined by the fact that he thought the charges ought to be dismissed. I should say that that decision did not take into account any of the evidence against Abelov. So that same justice is now going to consider all the evidence against him and will essentially stand in as the jury on Joel Abelov.
Casey Seiler, as we listen to these stories, it may seem that the outrage is not only in the murder or the killing of Black people, but in how these cases have been handled.
I'm wondering, as a journalist, why is it important for you to write pieces like this one?
Well, first of all, it's much more important for the journalists at the Times Union and at every other outlet not to necessarily opine on these things, but rather to make sure that they are doing their level best to expose exactly what happened in these incidents. As I've noted in previous columns before, unfortunately, civilians of every race will be injured and will die in police interactions. That is as certain as the firmness of the earth. What is absolutely necessary is that there is an investigative process, that there are independent protocols in place to make sure that those deaths are either righteous or wrong. And if they are wrong, that the perpetrators, the police who may commit misconduct, face sanctions. That is at the root of the protests over George Floyd, the outrage over the death of Daniel Prude. If, for example, the death of Daniel Prude had came to light a week or 2 weeks or even 2 months after he died, and there was a little bit more in the way of explanation of the context of it, there might still have been outrage, but it wouldn't have been nearly as bad as the upset exacerbated by the fact that this was essentially covered up and kept secret, and there's kind of no other way to think about it for 5 months.